Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, February 7th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, not a bad day in gold today. It certainly wasn't up. It struggled, but it was able to maintain that a level above 1230. So it's holding right now in the New York spot price after market at 1233.50, down to 70. Silver, same day, down 0.4 at 1778. Platinum was down 9 at 1008. And palladium was down 10 at 765. So pressure on all the metals. USDX today was up 0.41 at 100.32. Crude oil was down 0.84 at 52.17. Paper markets today didn't have a chance to follow the markets today. It was a hectic day here at Discount Gold and Silver. Everyone's taking advantage of our great specials we've been having here. The Dow was up 37 points at 20,090. The NASDAQ was up 10, 56.74. The S&P basically unchanged at 22.93. And if my computer becomes unfrozen, we'll go to the 10-year yield, 2.39% on the 10-year yield, down 0.02. The euro, 107, down 0.60. So that took quite a hit today. Let's see. Fear and greed still holding on that neutral level. So interesting that you have such high marks in the paper markets, and that's still holding. There's still a lot of concern, still a lot of fear that is creeping into the market. So it was kind of a flat day in the market, so to speak. I don't know. It's like, again, we're all waiting for something to happen, waiting for some sort of announcement from the new White House, the new administration. I haven't followed much of the news today. Was there any more information coming out on the executive order on the ban?
Oh, there's been a report that the Department of Justice has gone back against Judge Robards, I think that's his name, and they are advancing the same kinds of arguments we talked about yesterday. In fact, they quote the Immigration Act from 1952. I don't recall the exact name of it, but that one allows the president, says the president has the authority, and it's been used by Jimmy Carter, and it's going to be hard for the judge to sustain his opinion on this for much longer. I'm going to guess that before the end of this week, the judge is going to have to admit, never mind. Just forget that, and we'll move on with it. But Trump has absolutely the authority to do what he did, and it may be a surprise to people in the legal profession, but they don't need to know the law. They just need to know how to bill people. It's not important that they know how to know what the law actually says. And apparently, Judge Robards or whatever his name is, he's cut from that cloth. If it feels good, do it. That's the judge's mantra.
He was a Bush appointee, so I've even heard that he didn't even have the authority to stop the executive authority. But we'll see, and we'll see what happens. But I guess the administration, they're willing to take it all the way to the Supreme Court, as they should. So we'll see.
Yeah, he's going to get. It's almost virtual certainty he's going to be overruled. All right, but we'll watch and see. It's always a crapshoot when you go to court, and hard to say what's going to happen. The question is, what's happening to Trump? I'm wondering how well he's standing up under the stress and strain of being as active and aggressive as he'd been for the first 2 weeks in the White House. And he's had it coming at him from a bunch of different directions. I mean, there's one publication I saw just today, and the cover was a picture of Trump side of his side shot of his head with a cross over it of the sort that you would see if you were looking down a scope and you were firing a sniper's rifle, and the headline is, "Why not?" Now, that's got to be unnerving. I don't care who you are. You start seeing people that are actively, publicly advocating assassination. Well, it's the sort of thing that's got to be unnerving, and I wonder how.
Hey, yeah, Madonna up there saying that she's wanting to blow up the White House. I mean, all of them should be taken in and arrested, as far as I'm concerned. Get them off the streets. You know, I mean, this is the President of the United States. Regardless of who's holding office, those threats should not apply. And but I think he's got other stresses, and I do think there's probably turmoil inside. You get these personalities in there, these egos and so forth. They're all positioning themselves to do the jobs that they're assigned to do. And I mean, you go from Bannon to, and they're certainly different personalities. And I do listen to various programs and various people, even mainstream, because sometimes it gives you a different view on things. I certainly don't believe they tell the truth, and they're certainly all liberal in social in the social area of things, but sometimes they, you know, you listen and you listen to both sides, and you know, they were talking about Bannon, and they think he's the leak. They say he is a creature that seeks a certain amount of publicity, and it's almost probably they think it'll eventually become like a tug of war. These are people who have worked with Bannon before in the past, and they think that he is actually the one that's leaking, you know, some of the things that are coming out of the White House. And you have Priebus, and you have some of the other advisors, the son-in-law, who are trying to organize. We're trying to organize this so it runs smoothly. So, you know, they can get these executive orders in front of Mr. Trump with the understanding of what it is and you know, how it will affect things and how it will be addressed and viewed after he signs them and so forth. And then there's other ones in there that are trying to, you know, just, you know, here, sign this and be done with it. And there was a big discussions on him signing the order for Bannon being on the, I don't know what the, you know, the secret, you know, it's help me out here. Help
I
me out.
I can't help you, Melody. I don't know what you're saying. I don't know what you're trying to say here. So in any case, Bannon is, there are some suspicions
efforts,
about
the,
Bannon.
The Secret Service and so forth, that type of a board that he's been assigned to sit on. So, so it's going to be interesting to see if Mr. Trump, I think he controls things, but I also believe he delegates, and when he gets things
That's
from
it.
People, like, he expects that to be correct.
Yep. Trump is about policy.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And other people are there about implementation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that Trump, if there's been any leak from his own people, he has got to be upset about that. I cannot imagine that Trump's mentality. When was the last time somebody betrayed Trump's confidence? It was working for him, one of his employees. You know, it could have happened, might have happened 100 times for all I know, but I don't think it's a regular thing. I may not have ever happened before in a meaningful sense. I think Trump expects and demands loyalty, and he's not getting it. And that's got to infuriate the man. I think. That's my guess. And the strain and the stress. I mean, the presidency, from my perspective, they say any little boy can grow up to be president. And that may be true. Barack Obama is a good example. George Bush, W. Bush, he's another one. Doesn't take any real talent to be president. It takes connections. Yeah, it takes connections. I think neither one of them would have made it to office without significant connections. But my point is, you got to be a little bit crazy to be the president. You've got to be, and the reason I say that is everybody who gets into that White House, they're there for 8 years, and they look like they were there. They age as if they'd been there for 15 or 20. It puts years on you. The stress is enormous, and you got to wonder, you know,
well, I'll tell you
what is
what,
it that
Al,
you want to do so bad that you want to do that much stress?
Sometimes being president of the United States, you get stress in just real life, too. It ages people in 8 years,
not
too.
Me,
so,
you
know,
not me.
So, you know, life is life. We all have different stresses.
I get that.
We all are aged,
thing.
And, You know, hey.
But the presidency is bigger than any man can handle.
Oh, yeah. Well, you put in 8 years and look at old Obama. He's wealthy beyond his means. You know, he gets to go out to spend the rest of his life on taxpayer dollars.
But just the same, you want to do a good job. Anybody who's gotten in there wants
to
do a good
job.
They want to go into history books as being somebody who has been loved, respected, admired, and that job is perhaps too big for any man or woman to actually perform. There's people that get up there and they get in there. They sit it out for 8 years in the office, but I don't think anyone can live up to their own expectations. Say, I'm going to be a good president. I'm going to do good things. I'm going to do this, that, and the other, and everybody's going to love me and admire me, and you find out, no, they're not. You're going to get flack from almost anybody. The maid, right? The woman who delivered the coffee to the last meeting, she's going to do a report on you before this is done. It takes a peculiar personality to actually deal with the kind of stress that you encounter in the White House, in my opinion. And, that's nothing profound. I mean, you just have to assume it's a big job. And everybody thinks they can do it. Everybody wants to do it. But by the time they get done, it's got to be something of a heartbreaker. How many people do you think got out of, how many presidents can you think of who got out of the White House without significant regret? How many really lived up to their own expectations and their own objectives?
I don't think any of them leave with regret. I mean, this is the position of the mightiest, powerful position in the world. No, none of them leave with regret. They don't rule the presidency. The presidency rules them. They're puppets. They have been, always will be. So, they're puppets. You know, they try to create some sort of legacy, you know, so they don't go down as the worst president in history.
Exactly.
But, I mean, go back. I mean, how many people can even name half of the presidents anyway? I mean,
Super Bowl last year.
It's just a right in their own mind. And, you know, unless we all remember Washington, we all know who Lincoln is. We all know who Kennedy is. But beyond that, I'm sure
we'll
all know.
That's because they got shot. We remember the ones that get plugged.
Yes.
So ones that get out alive, we can't remember who they. Who was that?
And I'm sure we'll remember.
Gerald Ford? Who was he? Did he have a reality TV show or something like that? Gerald Ford? Nixon, we remember Nixon. He left in disgrace. They didn't shoot him, but he bailed out.
I think Trump won't be remembered. I don't think Trump. Well, it depends on where we're at the end of the 4 years. But they're not going to talk fondly of Trump, no matter what he does for this country. No matter how much.
Some people certainly will, and it may be that Trump really succeeds to a degree where people, even adversaries, have to admit, look, the guy did us some good. And under those circumstances, but he's got an uphill battle. You know, Trump had his honeymoon. You know, politician gets elected to the White House, and he has a kind of honeymoon that goes on for 6 months, maybe a year, after he gets into office, and everybody likes him and tries to cooperate with him. Trump's honeymoon took place before he took office. He was having effects on world news and world politics before he was inaugurated. Right? And now that he's there, I think his honeymoon is already over, and he's got to feel as if he's being attacked on every side by a pack of dogs. At least that's my suspicion. I wonder how well he handles that stress.
Well,
I don't
you know
think
what, Al?
He's had
they
the
just,
same kind of stress
they're
ever.
President of the United States, they just need to grow some, okay? Come on. You know, they wouldn't be.
Well, he's a strong man.
Good
Trump's
Lord.
A strong man, but I doubt, you know, he's fought good his battles.
Lord.
But I think he fights his battles one at a time. Now I think it's like he's being, I get the impression that he's surrounded again, like he's got a pocket full of bacon and there's a bunch of wild dogs running around and he's got to fight them all off.
And he doesn't have control if that's how you think he feels. Because if you have control and you're in charge, you're not going to have that type of situation surrounding you. So,
well, we shall see. We'll watch all of it, and we'll see. We'll learn things before we're done here. Some will be surprising, and some won't be surprising, but big-time lessons coming our way. And as I guess that's something you can expect, seeing as, you know, if you believe we're, a lot of people believe we're in or at least near end times. And if we are, there's going to be a lot of lessons coming down here. And some of us will learn them and some of us won't learn them, but there's going to be cause to learn if you care to, if you're inclined, if you're able, there's going to be an opportunity. You know, continuing education credits are going to be coming toward all of us if you care to take them. Got an article here from the Gateway Punt. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to talk about the trade deficit, but go ahead. We can do that when we get back from the break.
We got an article here from the Gateway Pundit, and we talked a little about this yesterday with the illegal aliens, and I was expanding on the idea that the reason cities want them, they want to do sanctuary cities and you're welcome here, don't worry about it, is because they get money from the federal government. And that money flows into their city and helps to support the city economy. Here's something from the Gateway Pundit. It says L.A. County is telling illegal immigrants how to get free money benefits paid for by working Americans. In Los Angeles County, they're handing out information to illegal immigrants on how to get free money benefits paid for by working Americans. The flyer reads, the USCIS guidelines permit immigrants and their children to use certain non-cash benefits and special purpose cash benefits without affecting their immigration status, including Medi-Cal, food stamps, healthy families, prenatal care, foster care, adoption assistance, transportation vouchers, housing assistance, energy assistance. Basically, they get everything free off the sweat of working Americans. Democrats love this, and my point is, it's all about the money. If the illegal aliens can get free money from the federal government shipped into a local community loves them. If you don't want the illegal aliens in your community, get the government to stop funding them when they have to support their own themselves and they can't get free. A lot of them are going to say, look, I'm going back to Mexico. And certainly, if they can't get something for nothing up here, it's going to discourage a percentage of Mexicans who want to immigrate up here and say, hey, they've shut off the welfare. But again, it's all about the money, in my opinion. And if that's true, cut off the money supply. That's the solution. When the federal government stops rewarding illegal aliens, which is to say rewarding crime, the local communities will stop inviting illegal aliens to stay. Let's take a break for a couple of commercials. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. For all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
We got a great special today. I've been able to offer Mint State 62 $20 gold pieces for the same price as American gold bullion coins. Well, things did change. But I can still offer Mint State 61 $20 liberties for the same price as an American gold eagle. That is priced at $1,305. So you can either buy yourself an American gold eagle, or you can buy yourself, upgrade your portfolio to Mint State 61 $20 liberties for $1,305.
The second offer. Could you buy one of both?
The second offer that I have are Mint State 63 St. Gaudens. Now, they're not going to be sold at the same price as a gold eagle, but they're only $35 more.
So that's a deal.
It is. So you're going from a 1 ounce American gold eagle, tack on $35, a Mint State 63 $20 St. Gaudens will cost you $1,340. Now, if you buy two or more coins, we'll include shipping for you. So one coin, you pay for shipping. Two or more, shipping will be included in the prices that I've quoted. So $1,305 for a gold eagle or a Mint State 61 $20 Liberty or a Mint State 63 St. Gaudens, $1,340. These are all common dates, and as long as the supply lists and I can keep the wholesale prices all stay the same and so forth, we'll honor these prices. So don't wait, don't delay. 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com.
Okay, sounds like a great deal, Melody.
It truly is.
Got an article here from CBS. And the headline is study. ID fraud up since security chips put into play. It's a tiny chip that elicits big opinions meant to protect customers from credit card fraud. Most credit cards now have security chips, and many businesses bought the chip readers to go with it. But more than a year after they became commonplace, research shows that identity theft is actually up. In other words, they put little chips in your credit card in order to prevent the credit card fraud. And in fact, since they started it, fraud has increased. Lane Connor, founder of the CEO of credit card processor Fuse, said the chip rollout was bungled from the start, in part because it was supposed to require a PIN, not just a signature. All right? They needed a PIN number. All right? He says the real security is supposed to be the PIN, and actually putting your PIN in when you actually dip the card. The bad guy could just as easily steal your wallet and go dip the credit card into a machine and sign for it like they're you, as you could swiping a card. He also said an increase in e-commerce is to blame since online shopping offers virtually no credit card protection. Scares business owners because no one wants to come under any kind of fraud. My point, and I harp on it from time to time, is that our brave new digital world is nowhere near as safe as a lot of people think. It is convenient. It is wonderful, operating on the assumption that there's no crooks out there. But it's a kind of like walking around with your money instead of having it tucked away in your wallet. You wear it on a safety pin attached to the back of your coat or your pants or whatever. And you pretend it's going to be amazing if anyone tries to steal a $100 bill that's pinned to your shirt. it's not going to be amazing. If it's out in the open, this is something like that, and it's more evidence. Everything I see, and they may be able to overcome the hackers in the foreseeable future. The hackers may be perhaps the people that are responsible for putting these systems together. We're going to find a way to stop the hackers, stop the thieves, and everybody's going to be happy with that, including me. I don't have an objection to it. But I don't think they can. Again, my fundamental my perspective on this is that if you're going to operate a digital system that's open to millions of people, as you must with a bank or a credit card or whatever, all the little places where you can use your credit card, if it's that easy to use your credit card or your debit card, it has to be that easy for hackers to break into it. I don't think digital is safe. It may be that you can have digital and it'll never bother you. You'll never have a problem, just on like playing Russian roulette. But it is not a reliable way to protect your wealth, so far as I'm able to see.
Well, I got some numbers here. I don't think your report gave any numbers, but 2016, as you mentioned, was an all-time high. An estimated 15.4 million consumers were hit with some kind of ID theft last year, and that was up from 13.1 million the year before. 2016 is going to be remembered as a banner year for fraudsters, and the fraud losses totaled about $16 billion. About one in every 16 U.S. adults were victims of ID theft last year, which is about 6.15%. And the incidence rate jumped some 16% year over year. That's amazing. This is despite, again, as you mentioned, the supposedly secure chip parts. Yeah. Yep. So that could. But you know what? I saw a report a long time ago, and this is really before computers advanced to the point where we were doing online banking and credit cards and so forth, online shopping. But there was a computer expert. And I remember he said, all the reports that you hear about identity theft, he says it's just not true. He says they exaggerate that number. And again, this is 15, 20 years ago, so I'm sure, I don't think this country has become more honest. But I remember at that time, he says it's just not as rampant as all the reports. They want you to believe that these losses and this identity theft is continuing to grow because they're trying to get you to accept various programs to protect yourself. They're trying to create a fear that your identity is going to be stolen, and you'll do anything, pay anything, accept anything in order to keep that from happening to you. So
They're talking, if I recall the numbers correctly, one in 16 adults is going to suffer some identity theft this year.
Mm-hmm.
That means every one of us.
If it's true.
Well,
yes.
Assuming the numbers are correct and the rest, that means every one of us is going to suffer some identity theft over at least once over the course of the next 16 years. All right, you get 1/16 going out this year. Well, we got 1/16 next year, and that's assuming the numbers don't increase. This is a problem. This is a big problem, and I think it's got to concern the people in banking and financial system. They have to be deeply concerned. One in 16 is getting ripped off.
Well, I think robbed. Too. I think so too. I mean, everybody knows somebody that has charges on their credit card up here that they didn't use. They call the company. The company reverses the charge, and they're not responsible for it. So the merchants,
who is?
Often the
who
merchant is? The merchant oftentimes is stuck with a price, but not the person where the ID theft has come from. In fact, that's one of the reasons I don't accept credit cards anymore. Twice. People buy something through a credit card. Then after they receive the product, they call the credit card company and say, gee, I didn't authorize that purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And the credit card company comes back and back charges the merchant. Now the merchant has to fight the credit card company and that customer. You have to prove that, the charge was legitimate. And I can remember this happened to us back in 1998. And I talked to the credit card company, and I says, are you kidding me that the merchant has no protection? You don't protect the merchant at all? Nope. He's anybody. You can buy anything you want online. And if you say you didn't authorize that purchase, they don't come after you for that object that you purchased. They go after the merchant, back charge his account, and everyone goes on their merry way. Yep.
Let the merchant essentially bail out the system that's mm-hmm. been robbed.
Yep.
Right?
I mean, there are some things you can do to protect yourself from that happening if you're the merchant. But, you know, it's an
expense.
Well,
if you're going to lose a 16th, if you lost a 20th, it'd be 5 on average. If you're going to lose, if you're going to get ripped off, a 16th of the people in this country get ripped off periodically, it translates into something like, 6-7%? 6% surcharge?
6.15%, huh?
That's not a small thing in today's super competitive environment. I don't know where that money's coming from, but it's certainly dangerous.
That's $16 billion.
Again, it's just my only point on all of this is you're vulnerable with this digital. All of us are. And if you want to preserve your wealth, it's not a bad idea to look to protect it from exposure to the digital, you know, the digital system. You need to put your wealth into something. We have to use it. I'm sure nobody's going to quit using digital, or not many people are going to quit using digital, but you may want to minimize your exposure as much as possible. The convenience is irresistible, but the exposure is significant. And you may want to, become increasingly aware and just say, look, I'm not going to expose my wealth to people who want to help themselves. Right now, I would guess that there are kids working in the basement or out in the garage on learning how to hack, learning how to hack their way into, and their parents are essentially telling them, look, if you want an allowance, go learn to be a hacker. Get your money from some people down the street or whatever. I can't afford to give you an allowance. But I gave you a computer, and now you can be a hacker. I'm being facetious, but, or at least attempting to be facetious, but it's not entirely just a joke. Kids are got, how much money can you make? I mean, kids have to be beguiled by the opportunity to go out and use your computer, just sit there in the dark someplace in your garage, in the basement, wherever in your room, and all of a sudden, bang, you can one way or another lay hands on $500,
$1,000, $10,000. Yeah, but Al, you're giving these kids too much credit. I love kids, I love children, and they're certainly much further advanced in some areas than we were when we were their age, you know, the young adults. But again, they know how to load apps. They know how to load an app and to take advantage of all the thousands and thousands of the apps that are available to them. Some of those apps are pretty cool. And yeah, I don't know where to find them and where to get them and where to download them. But I don't think very many of them are really into software design and being able to go in there and find their way around.
I understand what you're saying. It's not everybody. I know it's not everybody, and it's not even a big percentage.
Yeah. So but I don't think you're going to find kids in the
kids,
garage. I don't think you're going
to
find...
A lot of kids have to be beguiled by the potential.
I don't think you're going to find very many kids in the garage trying to hack into things. I mean, take a special child in order to have the ability to do that, and I'm sure they would probably already have been, chosen for their abilities.
Yeah, they all think they're special, Melody.
Yeah.
You don't learn till later in life that really you're not as special as you thought. It's one of our bitterest lessons as adults. You mean I'm not special? No, sorry. Holy cow, this is mind-boggling.
Well, here's something that's
special.
But
they think they're special, and we'll see what happens.
Here's something that's special. The U.S. trade deficit widened last year to the biggest 2012 since 2012 as exports fell more than imports through a narrowing gap in December's suggests demand and stabilizing overseas for American goods. So, for all of 2016, the deficit increased 0.4% to $502.3 billion, including a wider annual gap with Mexico and a smaller one with China. This is from the Commerce Department, the figures that came out today. The monthly shortfall shrank 3.2% to $44.3 billion, and the median forecast in a Bloomberg survey of economists called for a deficit of $45 billion. So it wasn't as high as 45, but we're just dealing with, you know, tenths of a percent of a billion. So, you know, I mean, numbers, what do they mean?
Right. I know. What do they mean anymore? But I don't remember who we were talking about who was assured by Congress, says, don't worry about it. The numbers don't matter. We'll just enact it and we'll get by. We don't have to worry about the numbers. They're just, and that's the way they operate. It is kind of a fiction, a fantasy. It's like playing Dungeons and Dragons or Game of Thrones or whatever.
No, it's monopoly money. You can go buy a hotel for...
And it is monopoly money. They're not mistaken about this. On one level, it doesn't matter because it's not real money. You know, who was it? J.P. Morgan Chase, back in 1912, if I recall correctly, testified to Congress. And he was talking about money and finances, one thing, another. J.P. Morgan, all right? And 1912, thereabouts... And he said, gold is money and nothing else is. Huh? He understood that. And I suspect that there are people in Washington who would still agree with that opinion. Gold is money, the rest of it, it's just razzle-dazzle. Right? If you
Everybody
think
does.
It's
Bernanke,
a peculiar kind of
Bernanke's
bartering we're here.
Bernanke's admitted it. We know Greenspan's view and thoughts on gold. So they all get it.
Yeah.
But they also get it that you can't have it during a fiat monetary system. They get that, too. So
the two are competitors. I mean, the fiat money...
That's my point. They get it. You know, they get the value of money. They get the value of gold. Gold is money. They understand that. That's why I said gold is money. They get that. But they understand they can't have it, and they understand who pays their paycheck and how to become wealthy. So they're just as easy to ditch their views is what's right to choose the road of being more
least political resistance and most political contribution.
The most
and if the people want to hear a fairy tale road. We will tell them a fairy tale because that's how you get elected.
I just want to add,
you know, somebody up there ought to just say, look, this is a fraud. This is a Ponzi scheme.
I just want to add a little bit more on these exports. Of December increased 2.7%. That's the most since 2012 to $190 billion on higher sales of commercial aircraft and industrial supplies. Imports rose 1.5% on purchases of motor vehicles and materials used in manufacturing. Excluding petroleum, the trade shortfall narrowed to $38.2 billion. From 39.
We'll talk more about the trade shortfall when we return to financial survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Well, to finish up that report, I just wanted to say the trade data, as I mentioned before, the deficit with China shrank to $347 billion from $367 billion, and the shortfall with Mexico expanded to a five-year high of $63 billion from $60 in 2015. So I thought that was kind of interesting how those kind of reversed a little bit with the deficit expanding with Mexico and shrinking with China. So,
what do you think is going to happen to Mexico? How much stress is Mexico under if things go badly in the relationship between the United States and Mexico? I mean, Trump is antagonizing the Mexicans to some degree. They're used to getting a certain amount of free goodies out of the United States, and they would argue they're not getting anything for nothing. We see a lot of people say, no, that's not true. You're getting over. But what happens to Mexico if the wall is built, if the illegal aliens can't move into this country? That's going to create a population pressure within Mexico that might be significant, detrimental. They're already under a great deal of stress. They've got armies, private armies, you know, that at least it's not an army in the sense we think of armies and being the army of the United States or army of the Soviet or the Russia or whatever, but it's still, it's like companies, certainly platoons of soldiers employed in a private capacity to support their drug dealing and whatever. Mexico's under a great deal of stress as it is right now, and I wonder how fragile is Mexico. And if Mexico breaks out into a revolution, what's going to happen? Are we going to wind up with a communist country on our southern border? If things go badly, you know, this is dangerous business. The whole world is, you know, again, we talk about it all the time, but it is fragile, and you've got to consider what might happen. What are the possibilities?
Well, I don't think you're going to see much change. I don't think we're going to get into, I think the biggest trading war, not to say that there won't be some disruptions and so forth, but I think ultimately everyone understands that they need the flow of goods. And, you know, no one, I think, especially on the southern border, wants war. And again, it's just turning the illegals into legal so they can come into this country and work. That's what it's all about. The multinational corporations, you know, I mean, they're basically getting, you know, tax cuts and everything else in order to help grow jobs here. But, you know, I don't know if you're going to see much change at all. However, I was reading an article today, and I mean, tariffs and taxes are a real thing, and yeah, we might see those, so I really don't know. But I was reading an article today, and it was basically gave three different perspectives of people. I mean, one was worked in a factory, one, you know, worked in a restaurant, and the other one was a farmer, a U.S. A dairy. He had a dairy, and he says he depends. He employs Hispanic workers. He trusts them to do a dirty and difficult job that he says white people aren't willing to do. And he says, you know, if I don't get to hire them anymore, he says things are tough already. The price of milk and agricultural goods, the prices have plummeted. It's getting harder and harder to keep things running. He wants the president to reduce red tape and renegotiate the trade deals to benefit American farmers. But that's how he thinks that Trump's move to build the wall, you know, he's not really for that. He says, but He says it's like a crap game. He says, you know, he's just going to roll the dice and see what happens. But he's not so sure that some of these changes will actually be make America great again for the farmers. But he had to gamble, and he voted for Trump because I guess some change is better than no change, at least. So when you talk about Mexico and their employees and what they do in this country that, you know, other people don't want to do that live here and so forth, you know, there's something to that. So getting
them
legal.
Here's what's to it, though. Here's the point to this. We have handled our own business in this country for most of 200 years. Why did we all of a sudden grow so finicky that we aren't willing to take a dirty job?
I don't know.
And the answer is because they're not paying us enough money. It's not about whether we had people pump out our septic tanks. They're here. We had people to dig ditches. We've been here. We've done it all our lives. But we did it at rates that were fair. What some of these people say,
yeah, but
oh,
those jobs never
have to
did
do this.
Pay well.
Prices
Al.
Have to go up.
Those
some
jobs-
prices have to go up. And maybe the economy has to be rebalanced in a way where people can be paid a fair wage for a decent, for a difficult job.
But you never got a decent wage for those types of jobs.
Goodbye.
Well, yeah. And why? Why were people able to get by on something that didn't pay very well? Because
they were hacking into other people's credit cards?
No, Al. I mean, the system didn't create the inflation that we have today.
Well, we had
people
real money.
Well, even then, it wasn't all totally real, but half of it was. But, I mean, it didn't cost. You could buy a vehicle for $50, $100, a used one.
Mm-hmm.
A used car today, and that was a decent one. To get a decent used car today, you're still spending $10,000, $11,000.
You know, when you talk about picking up a vehicle for $100, I think I'd actually bought one for $75.
I bought one for $50. That was my very first car. It was $50. Mm-hmm. Bucks. My mm-hmm. grandparents bought it for $50.
It didn't even have wooden wheels, did it, Melody? I mean, This is still fairly modern circumstance. But when we're talking about, say, a $100 vehicle, that was 100 silver dollars up until 1965 through 68 when we finally went off the silver standard in this country. 100 silver dollars right now. 100 of them would translate at $20 a piece in today's, if those 100 silver dollars right then would be worth about $2,000 right now. Right? In terms of the currency that we're using right now. $2,000 is not a bad deal for an automobile. I've said a bunch of times, my first little job was 85 cents an hour. Working for Blau Motors back when I was in 7th, 8th grade. Sweep up for an hour or two after school. All right, 5 days a week and sweep up his garage. Pay 85 cents an hour. Doesn't seem like anything. It was 85 cents, 85% of a silver dollar. That's what I was getting paid as a 7th or 8th grader. That translates in today's dollars, the way we have it today, that's like $15, $17 an hour. That's not a bad price for a kid in eighth grade. I made enough money, I could go out and buy things. I mean, I was pleased. I had 85 cents today, sounds like nothing. It was 85% of a silver dollar. We had purchasing power, and my point, and we give it to you on a regular basis, but that's one of the fundamental problems we have. We're not being paid in real currency. We're not being paid in real money. We are being paid in just paper script, and it constantly degrades and devalues and inflates. And I don't know. The world is changing, and it's not going to change for the better until people actually make an effort to understand money. And most people don't know anything about money other than how to count it. Look, I have a 10, it's worth 2 fives. I have a 20, it's worth 2 tens. I have a 50, it's worth 2.5 twenties. We understand that the bigger ones are more valuable than the little ones, but beyond that, people don't understand anything about the nature of money, and it's something they really need to understand. It's like oxygen. You can't see it, you can't taste it, you can't smell it, but if all of a sudden you're put in circumstances where you can't get any oxygen, you're going to die. Real money is like that in this regard. If you're put in a situation where we don't have access to real money and we are convinced that we can get along on fiat currency and debt instruments instead of asset-based monetary system. If you want to go along with that, you think that's going to work? It has. You got to admit it's worked. It's worked, you know, since at least in domestically since the 1960s in this country. Close to 50 years. Internationally, it's 45 years it's been working. But it's not going to work forever. And it can't. And you need to take the time to understand the difference between a debt-based monetary system, which is what we have, it's all based on debt, and an asset-based monetary system is what we had, right, when our currency was still backed by gold and or silver. Assets. We've been bamboozled, we've been conned, we've been deceived. And as long as we are dumb enough to allow that deception, we are exposing ourselves to a penalty that will be severe and, you know, extraordinary before this is all over. You don't know what money is? You be dumb. All right? You have to make it your business to learn the difference between money and currency, debt and assets. And when you do, then all of a sudden you begin to. There are certain consequences of that understanding. There are implications. You say, well, if that's true, then I probably don't want to put my store my wealth in the form of paper or digits. I want to store my wealth in the form of something tangible, something that is money, or at least tangible, in the sense of gold, or in the sense of land, tools, whatever, something productive, tangible. That's not money, but it's something that has real value. And if you want money, if you think you're going to need money, you really need to start looking at gold and silver. Yeah. What's next, Molly?
Well, it was just, I think it was earlier this week, Monday or last week, talked where they removed the protesters from North Dakota. And I saw this article where the amount of trash that was left behind and that they're beginning to remove. I'm thinking, well, why didn't they remove this trash while these people were there? I mean, why did they, you know, let the stuff, and it's just mountains of debris that has to be moved before the spring thaw occurs. And the standing...
What will happen with the spring thaw?
Well, this is, it'll become toxic. He says in a month all this will become toxic. All the garbage that was left behind is now frozen into massive chunks of junk. He says in a month all this trash could become toxic. So you have the Standing Rock Environmental, of course, the EPA, and the Dakota Sanitation. They're working together to try to, you know, invert some sort of environmental tragedy.
So let me see if I understand correctly. The demonstrators up there are trying to prevent environmental degradation or pollution. And at the same time, they are causing environmental degradation and pollution.
But on the other hand,
it's kind of an interesting irony.
But then on the other hand, you have the Standing Rock EPA. Why did they allow, you know, this trash to be left behind, knowing that it could create some sort of an environmental tragedy? So it seems like everyone was wrong. But
met the enemy, and they are us.
Not only are they just hauling away, but they're going through it. They're searching through all these piles of garbage. He says the sheriff's office says that they're looking for anything illegal, anything that might be used to harm our officers during a protest. Well, this is trash. They're gone. How can they harm the officers during a protest? So yeah, they're looking for people that may have died. This is their excuse.
They think
there
are dead bodies buried in the trash?
That's just what the sheriff said. I mean, it's just it's going to take like 250 trucks filled with litter to clear the camp. So, and again, my question is, why did they let it go, the trash, for so long? They could have come by on a monthly basis and picked up the trash that was there from the protesters, but they didn't.
Well, they're going to sit back. From their perspective, they're betting that the protesters will get so sick of the trash that it'll create pressures that make them go away. And if they're coming in and we're going to provide service, we're going to give them trash pickup, we might as well supply them with water, and then we may as well give them some food. And, I don't know, maybe a little welfare to cover their insulating their tents or whatever, so they're okay. I don't know what their motives were, but I can understand that they wouldn't be eager to provide them with semblance of civilization.
But also today, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced that they intend to grant the easement to Dakota Access to construct the pipeline under Corps-managed federal land at the lake. They also announced that it will not be preparing an environmental impact statement. So they really could care less if it damages the water for drinking purposes. I mean, they could care less. And that's, what the whole issue was about. All they have to do is
all you have to do is attract media attention, and other than that, it doesn't matter what you are or how you behave.
No, all it takes.
That's the way some people are looking at it.
All it takes is the amount of money to be made by someone in order to, just hush everything up, get it done, and be done with it.
An article by Paul Craig Roberts that parallels what we're talking about. And the headline is, "The Left Wing Has Placed Itself in the Trash Can of History." At a time when the Western world desperately needs alternative voices to the neoliberals, the neoconservatives, the prostitutes, and the Trump deregulationists.
Oh,
well, no surprise. All right, we'll have to deal with that problem from Paul Craig Roberts tomorrow. I'm Alfred Addisk. I'm here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back tomorrow, and I hope you'll tune in. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.